Okay, so today is October 3rd, and we are going to be talking about to advise or not to advise. That is the question when it comes to coaching. But, you know, I see this, being able to apply this. Actually, I talk a lot about this topic to the leaders that I work with as well. So hopefully that's some value. I'm going to ask all of you to go on mute unless you're talking. So we can just keep the line as quiet as possible. Okay. So, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Tina Elliott. I'm a PCC and BCC credential coach, and a long time, I'm going to say past, member of the ICF Ethics and Standards Committee, as well as the Independent Review Board at ICF, which is the Ethics Complaint Board. Also a mentor coach and faculty member at two coach training organizations and a coaching professional now for almost a quarter of a century who is passionate about ethics and supporting coaches to operate at the highest ethical standards. So I just want to welcome everyone who is here today. I will do my best to keep lines open, but again, we'll ask you to mute if you're not speaking, but I do want to hear from you today. So I'm going to be throwing some questions out and hope that you'll engage with me or share your thoughts. You know, I'm going to say for quite a while now, there's been a lot of ongoing ethics conversations around advising. So we're going to look more closely at some of the things certainly coming out of ICF ethics, and we're going to look a little more closely at advising in general. Is that Lou? Did you join us? You're here now?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to put yourself on mute, okay? We're getting just a little feedback. I'm going to try to cut it down and then just come off mute when you're ready. Your mute is over on your far left side usually, okay, on your screen. Okay. All right, so we're going to be looking at our own desire. What is our own desire to advise people or even maybe advise our clients? We'll be looking at why advising is not part of the ICF core competencies or the code of ethics. We'll be taking a look at what is the potential liability advising our clients could create for coaches. And then what if any code of ethics could potentially be breached if we were advising our clients. So, and even more so, we're going to be looking at what growth opportunities are we taking away from our clients when we are advising, okay? All right. So we are going to also, by the end of this conversation, look at how we handle the question. When you get that question from your client, so what do you think I should do? Or what is your advice? We're going to talk about how we handle that in a coaching frame, okay? All right, so, and I will be sharing some tips around this again. You know, how do we handle that? What's best for us to do? But part of this is really looking at ourselves and maybe what our need might be to advise. So some of us, I'm going to say, have long-term backgrounds in advising just in general. Is anybody else like that besides me here? Part of your job, part of being a mom, anybody, a dad?
I need you to define advising, please, so we have some boundaries and parameters.
Okay, so advising is when we advise our clients. So they might ask a question like, well, what would you say, or what's your advice? And we actually give them advice. So information that we think might help them with whatever their challenge or whatever their situation or whatever they're dealing with. So really like saying, oh, I'll give you an example. So for example, I have a long time background in project management, and I work with a lot of project managers. And because of that background, sometimes they'll say, well, Tina, you've been a project manager. How would you do this? And that's the thing I'm always like, you know, I don't want to go there because that's not what I want to do. Is I could tell them Well, here's how I would do that. But that's not really coaching. Does everybody understand that? That's not really coaching. We want to be coaching the client for their own best answer. Right? So does everybody understand what we're talking about here? Advising versus coaching. Okay? Again, some of us, like myself, I used to be a consultant. I had a long time background in advising. That's what I did as part of my job. Advising companies, installing big systems, enterprise software systems, and giving them advice about how to set something up or how to do something or how to mirror a process on this new system. That was part of my role. But as coaches, it's really not part of our role. What do you think? Does anybody think advising is part of our role as a coach? Let's have some shares. What do you think? Anybody? Is advising part of our role here as a coach?
No.
Thank you. So. Now, does that mean we can never? What do you think?
I'm going to disagree.
Oh, you disagree? Who's
I
this?
I disagree because I have been a physician, a consultant, and I'm now a coach.
Right.
I coach people applying to medical school in Canada.
Okay.
And that's what they're paying for me, is my advice on how they need to structure their application. Now, so, I do a lot of digging it out of them, but they rely on me.
Mm-hmm. So,
I am expert in this area.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, though. Is your role not, it sounds like your role is not only coaching. Is that correct?
No, I have to advise them because I'm an expert in this area.
Right.
I do it much like I always did as a physician. Mm-hmm. To, you know, what do you think? You know, tell me. I use all the questions to try and draw out things for them before
right.
I say, just do this. I don't do that until
right.
I say, this is where the line is drawn.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I have to do that. So
okay.
That's why I say it's really important to define coaching, to define advising, in order that the parameters are clear and the boundaries are clear. Because, you know, if I were back in my physician role, it would be different.
Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you for sharing. Appreciate you sharing that. Sounds like your role, though, is more than a coach, though. I think that's kind of what we're going to be talking about as well. Is that true?
Well, it depends on how you're defining things. You know, people will perceive me as a coach because that's what I'm doing. I'm coaching them through the process.
Right.
Digging out of them what their experience is, what it is that people want to hear about.
Right.
And getting them to write it as best they can and then showing them how their writing style isn't going to get them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching them how to write better. So,
right.
So I think it's really important that each person's practice has a different clientele with different needs and expectations.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point. So I think where I'm coming from here is I'm coming from ICF guidelines and standards, ICF ethics, and also what I can say, and I know for myself, we have to be clear on our role, too. You know, are we a coach? Are we a consultant? For example, I mentor. And in that mentoring, I am sharing wisdom and other things as well. So being very clear in what we are doing and what our advice is. So how I'm delivering information today is aligning with ICF's code of ethics. Okay?
Yep.
So thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that.
It wasn't any criticism at all. I'm just saying it's very challenging when there aren't clear guidelines on relation to what people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Thanks for that. You know, and that's another big piece that's come into the Code of Ethics, and that's a whole other conversation about what really is our role. You know, what is our role when either we are in organizations, when we are working with multiple people, For example, in an organization, being clear on what our role is. Like, for example, I am a consultant, but I am also a coach. So I want to be clear on what my role is and what is involved. What is my role? What do I do? So when I go in, and that's a big part of what we do as coaches, too, when we go in and work and we work with clients, is to be clear right up front with our clients. What is our role? What will you get from me? Okay? So that's another important factor there. So thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate that. So I think what's important here is our awareness around advising. If it is part of your role, then it's part of your role. But most of the time in coaching, it's typically not unless we have another piece or another, we're doing two things, as there are two or three different things, or we're mentoring, those types of things. But I'm talking about a pure coaching role, okay? So when I say that, what's important is when we advise, or I'm going to say when we want to, I have that feeling sometimes like I have some information I can share with them. So I want to advise them, right? That's something, if that's our thinking or that's a pattern or habit, we have to be aware of that. And I know for the longest time, with me being a consultant for years, that was part of my role. It was very easy to do that. But this is a little different, something we really have to think about when we're coaching, because our role is to give the best value to our clients. And typically, depending on our role, it's not. We can do more. We can do more and do better as a coach by staying in that coaching frame, asking those questions. You know, I want to share a little analogy here from another very, very famous coach, Michael Bungay Sr. He does a talk on taming your advice monster, he calls it. And it's a really funny video. You can look it up on YouTube. But here's what Michael says. He says, we all have an advice monster, and the advice monster does not really listen as they know the advice they want to give. And I thought, that's interesting. Okay? So we're going to look at two things here. One, when we want to give advice and being clear what that's about, and how we might handle that differently. And then we're going to look at what if our client asks us for advice. Okay? So Michael says your advice monster has three different personas. He says one is tell it. He says it is the loudest of the three, and the only way you add value is to have the answers. He said the other, second advice monster is more subtle. It's called save it. Your job is only to rescue everyone if they fail. If they fail, you fail. And then the third one he calls the sneaky one. He says it's called control it. The only way you win is to control it at all times or everyone will fail. And I've certainly seen this a lot in working in organizations. Okay. So those are just fun little ways to kind of look at this, look at your own thinking. If you have a tendency or you want to give advice, be aware of those monsters. I'm going to talk a little bit now about engaging the whole brain, and this actually comes out of research. So as coaches, we believe that clients have their own answers, and the role of the coach is to create a space for the client's wisdom to emerge. Okay? So giving advice detracts from the client's autonomy. And when a coach gives advice, the client owns less of the solution or the idea or how they want to move forward. And without this ownership, there's less accountability and less motivation. So this is the fascinating research, and they actually did this research in financial advice. So 2009 research on financial advice and decision making was done by Jan B. Engelman, C. Monica Capra, Charles Nassar, and Greg S. Burns. They illustrate the brain offloads Well, it's taking advice. So it's not really thinking fully, using all aspects of the brain. The brain goes into neutral, and the actual advice does not embed in the neocortex while the advice is being given. And as a consequence, ownership might happen later, or maybe not happen at all. And as coaches, we want our brains to be fully engaged, our clients' brains. And by giving advice, we appeal only to the rational part of the brain. However, to fully engage the client, we want to engage the emotive and sensory parts of the brain in the decision-making process. And without fully engaging the brain, the likelihood that the client will make an unethical decision increases dramatically. Now, isn't that interesting? That all comes out of research. What do you think about that? Anybody have some thoughts? No thoughts? Okay. So let me ask you this question. What's in it for us to give advice? Anybody have a thought on that one? What's in it for us? Well, many things. We might feel important. We might feel useful. Maybe we get to be in charge or feel like the expert. Maybe it's our own ego. Okay? So let me ask you this question. Why is advising not part of the ICF core competencies or code of ethics? Anybody? Any idea?
But the conversation is the client's, not ours.
Yeah, but why is it not part of the ICF core competencies or code of ethics? Anybody?
I don't think that giving advice is part of coaching.
Oh, thanks, Linda. Okay. Not part of coaching. Because it probably would be in the core competencies, at least according to ICF, right? It was something that we did as part of our core set of skills. Not in the code of ethics either.
I always think it's stepping out of the coaching role.
Yeah, great. So stepping out of the coaching frame. Now, again, we clarified this earlier with someone that's doing coaching and other things together. So that would make it different. But staying, I like to say staying fully in the coaching frame, there really isn't a need if we know how to coach the client, right? And that's where the best answer always comes from, is the client.
But giving advice is a form of telling, which is
Yeah, absolutely it is. Okay. And here's, go ahead.
I was just saying, so I spend a lot of time teaching people to show rather than tell in their communication skills, because most often they're trying to persuade somebody of something, and you will not get anywhere by telling them.
Yes. A lot of people actually, that what they were talking about in the research, they turn off their brain when they're getting advice, and especially unwarranted advice. And here's the thing.
They say prove it. Their brain says prove it.
Okay.
Negative response in that way.
Okay. Anybody else? What potential liability could advising our clients create for coaches? Anybody have some thoughts on that?
I hate to keep talking, but I think, this is Linda again, I think it's if something goes wrong with the, if they take your advice and it goes wrong, could you be responsible for the difficulty they're in? I don't know.
Thank you for talking. No, I appreciate it. You talk as much as you want. Please do. If others are quiet, please do. Okay. You're right. Absolutely. Depending on the situation, depending on who you're working with, depending on what the advice is, yes, this could be a liability, handing out advice. you know, if you think about it, I'm going to say our liability insurance for coaches is very inexpensive. And it's very inexpensive for the reason that we are not advising. We are not doing that. We are not consulting. We are not advising. Okay? So, and having all the years, 16 years working in ethics, I have seen situations like this where a coach, I call it, stepped out of a coaching frame, decided to advise. It was bad advice. Came back, a very serious issue at a very large organization, and caused a huge liability. And by the way, if a coach is stepping out of the coaching frame when they have coaching, I'm going to say coaching liability insurance coverage, that insurance is not going to cover you either because you're not staying in the coaching frame. Thanks for that, Linda. I appreciate that. So what do you think the potential outcome could be for you as a coach if you or to do something like that or provide some what you might think innocent advice, or maybe you were even asked and it goes bad? What could happen, do you think, for you as a coach? Anybody?
Well, if you're working within the ICF realm, you could be brought in front of the review board.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely could. Sure. They could file a complaint. Anybody else? Think there could be any legal ramifications? Anybody?
It's Linda again. I definitely think there can be legal liabilities with the organization, with the person, depending on what the situation is.
Sure.
And you'd be brought up on charges.
Mm-hmm. Good point. You know, I think it's really common and something that's been around for a very long time in coaching. It goes back probably 40 plus years. And that is when doing leadership coaching or CEO executive level coaching, it was assumed that you would be, as a coach, a CEO, and you would be in advising. That was a very common thing that went on long before the profession of coaching came into play. And because of that, it's a common thing that I'm going to say upper level leaders, they've worked with these types of, they call themselves coaches, they're really consultants, but they call themselves coaches, and then when you come in there as the coach, they may expect that from you. I've been put in that situation, and I've had to let them know, you know, that's not really coaching as defined by the ICF. Okay, so that's something to think about too, and I think when we lay out our agreements with our clients, you know, if we're doing pure coaching, I think we need to be clear on what our role is. You know, I will certainly tell my clients right up front, you know, just to be clear on what coaching is, defining what coaching is, how I partner with them, letting them know I do not provide advice. And that assumes that I am working in a pure coaching role. If I'm mentor coaching, that's a different story. And I share what I will do as a mentor. So I may be in a coaching frame, I may be coaching, but at the same time, I'm very clear right up front. So I don't get those questions typically. What's your advice? What do you think I should do here? Regina, hold a minute. You got some background noise, Regina, so I'm going to go ahead and mute you, okay?
What I think is important as well, because a lot of people have never been coached before, is to get clear what their expectations are of your coaching.
Absolutely. Setting expectations.
What are you expecting? How do you think coaching works? And so then we have some dialogue about where I can draw the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So we want to always ask the question to our clients, what do you know about coaching? Or what do you understand coaching to be? What is it you need when you come to coaching? I mean, that's kind of all when we have either those complimentary meetings or whatever we want to call them, is we want to clarify that what they're coming for is what we provide. I have had individuals come to me thinking I was going to be consulting. I even had an individual come to me many years ago, said he was a coach. I'm thinking, oh, well, he knows coaching. Well, that was a big assumption. Because his coaching was nothing like what I do coaching. So he was assuming that I was going to be advising, that I was going to be consulting, and I said, that's a whole different thing. I said, I do consulting, not that type of consulting that you're looking for. So, yeah. So we do. We have to. It's part of even part of our ethics. The first ethics code actually speaks to that, that we have to set that up in the beginning, be clear with what our clients, what we're delivering, what is our role, and what is their role in the coaching engagement. Anybody else have any thoughts or comments on that? Okay. Now, this is some other words, some great words from Michael I'm going to share with you. He says, three ways advice giving goes bad. Number one, he says, you're busy solving the wrong challenge. You are seduced into thinking that the first challenge is the real problem, and it almost never is. Has anybody else encountered that? Your client says, this is my situation? Or I'll give you an example. I coach a lot of business owners. And they'll say, oh, my business isn't successful. This is the reason, all of this. And they go into that. Okay. But what's really happening causing the lack of success in the business? That's what's underneath. That's not said in the beginning. And that's our role, is to get to what's really underneath that. What's the truth? What are they doing or not doing? How are they, I'm talking like with an entrepreneur, how are they getting in the way of their business success? All right? So that's what Michael says. A lot of times the first time somebody asks for advice, that's not really the real problem, the real issue. He says, too, your advice is really not nearly as good as you might think. He says, you might think that your advice is magnificent. But he says, go check out Cognitive Bias TED Talk. And it's going to explain just how bad your advice might be. You know, that's something else, too, to be aware of. It's our advice. We may not have all the information for the client, for their situation, their relationships, their work situation, their personal situation. We don't have all of that. We're only giving advice from what we know or maybe what worked for other people. Okay. Number three, so he calls it, cuts a little deeper. He says, if you're on the receiving end of the advice monster, you're constantly getting the message that you can't figure this out yourself. This cuts away from your self-confidence and your own sense of autonomy. And he says that's one of the biggest challenges with handing out advice. Okay. And if you think about it, in our role when we're handing out advice, we're disempowering people. We're not coaching them to figure it out, to come up with their own best decision. Okay? Because that's what we do as coaches. We coach them. All right? Questions or any other thoughts on that? Okay, so let's talk about the code of ethics just for a minute. Anybody have any thoughts on what could happen, or could there be any breaches of code if you're advising? Anybody? What do you think? Okay, so I'm going to share a few codes depending, of course, on the situation that could apply, or I'm going to say codes that I have seen apply in past complaints. Okay? So this is a big one. Number 11, it says, I am aware of and actively manage any power status or difference between the client and me that may be caused by cultural, relational, psychological, or contextual issues. So are you in an equal partnership with your client? And is there a power imbalance when you're advising? When you're advising, is there a power imbalance? Let's have a share on that. What do you think? Anybody? Yes, there is. There is a power imbalance when you start advising. You shift the partnership. You shift the equal partnership. Okay? So it becomes a power imbalance. All right? Let's look at number 17. And this is where I think our personal awareness really comes into play. Recognize my personal limitations or circumstances that might impair, conflict with, or interfere with my coaching performance or my professional coaching relationships. I will reach out for support to determine the action to be taken, and if necessary, promptly seek relevant professional guidance. This may include suspending or terminating my coaching relationship. So, if you're a coach and I had this background for years too of advising, I had to work really hard on not doing it and learning this, that I don't need to do that. You know, our clients are fully capable, whole human beings, and they can figure this out if we utilize the skills of coaching. Okay? So, yeah, it could come back. If there was a complaint, it could come back to this, that I wasn't aware that I really didn't need to do that as a coach. And then there's one other one. This is a pretty broad code that can cover, I'm going to say, a lot of aspects of coaching. It's number 28. This is a newer section of code in 2019. And it says, I'm aware of my client's impact on society. I adhere to the philosophy of doing good versus avoiding bad. So let's say something went bad, you gave out some advice, somebody decided to use that advice, and let's say it went south, it went really bad, it did not turn out well at all. Yeah, there could be an impact there. Okay? All right. Questions or comments on the code of ethics around this? So let me ask you, what growth opportunities do we potentially take away from our clients when we choose to advise instead of coach? Anybody?
They stop thinking for themselves.
Right.
You know, it's an infantilizing behavior to.
Right. Right, absolutely. Yeah, good point. Thank you. Anybody else? We take away a lot of growth opportunities because the best growth opportunities are the growth opportunities that the client comes up for themselves. With us doing the coaching, them figuring out what works best for them. Okay. Any questions or comments so far on what we've talked about?
Okay. I'm sorry, it's Linda again. I was wondering if you could maybe highlight the difference between challenges that we might give our clients instead of advice.
So I need to understand what you mean by challenges that we give our clients.
If we've been talking about a certain thing, they brought up something, and they're hesitant to do something, if we would make a challenge to them. So they've been wanting to talk to their partner about a certain situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might say, how about if I would challenge you that by the next time we talk, you've had that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to accept that challenge?
Mm-hmm. And what is your question around that?
And I guess what I'm saying is how challenges can be a way of giving the client the ability to say yes or no, to have some choices, but also helping them to move forward in the direction that they've said they want to move to.
Right. So just kind of, we call it a technique of just do it. You know, and this is something they've been talking about for a while, most likely with you, about something they want or need to do. Is that correct?
Right.
So So they've been talking about it. This is what they want to do, but some, many times it can be fear. It can be all different kinds of things getting in the way. So we call, I call that technique, just do it. So having them make a commitment to go do it, because they've been talking about this is what they want to do. Yes, I do that quite often with clients. I have clients back from fear, from having a conversation. I'm going to say mentees getting out there and building their business and having fear, and they hold back, and I will challenge them. So that challenging is part of our core competency. Okay, and this is all what they've been talking about, but see, you did it in a coaching frame. You asked the questions, and they get to decide, right?
Right.
Right. Yeah,
thank you.
Good point. Thanks. Yes, thanks for sharing that. Anybody else? Okay, so we're going to jump in a moment. We're going to start looking at how do we do this coaching? How do we handle those questions if we get that wanting advice from a client? Yes, and sometimes they forget. That's not our role. But we'll talk about how do we handle that. But we're going to do that in just a second, because I'm going to take 30 seconds here and tell you about the upcoming ethics workshop where we dive deeply into all the ICF as well as BCC code of ethics, looking at both, digging into actual real coaching situations, dilemmas that you thought could never happen, probably, in the coaching industry, but they do. So this workshop starts, or this course at the ILCT. If you're an ILCT student, you can actually sign up for it at ILCT. And it's called Coaching Ethics IQ. Starts Thursday, October 17th, and it goes through November 21st from 3 p.m. At Eastern Time till 4:30. So just letting you know that's there. You can get started your training hours, or you can get CCEs. Part of this workshop, not only do we go through all these various situations, you, again, will look very closely at yourself. You know, what is your thinking? Do you have any blinders on when it comes to ethics? And then also part of this, I hand out 20 tips to keep you out of ethical hot water, as well as a sample, I call it one-of-a-kind coaching agreement for working individually with one-on-one coaching. So I just wanted to let you know that's upcoming. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and step in. How do we handle that question? So what do you think I should do, or what advice do you have for me? Let's have some shares. What if your client asks you that? What do you say? Anybody have some thoughts?
I guess I'll speak again. You could ask them, what are they trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the real thing? What are you really trying to accomplish? What's the real situation? Notice that word real. That's a powerful word when you're working with your client, is to ask them questions. Okay? You know, some coaches have gone into the arena of doing what we call coaching brainstorming if needed. If they're saying, I don't know, or I need some ideas from you, you can do brainstorming. But then is there a liability to that? Yes, a little bit. But, of course, when we're talking coach in the coaching frame, when we're brainstorming, you know, when you're in a brainstorming meeting, I've been in thousands of them over my corporate career, everybody just throws out ideas. And coaching brainstorming, typically what we're doing is we're going to support the client to come up with more ideas than we do as the coach. So we're going to say, I'll say to my client, okay, you give me three ideas and I'll give you one and we'll do it again. And it's funny, they'll go, oh, no. Oh, well, yeah, come on, let's just have fun, get crazy, all kinds of ideas. And they'll do that, and guess what? They have, typically, I'm going to say 99% of the time, much better ideas than I ever could have. And the reason is because they know themselves and what they're trying to accomplish better than I do. So I think that is one way to do it. I have had, for example, project managers working with them, and because I have a background in that, they will ask something that's project management related. I'll say, you know what, let's hold that aside. We'll come back to that after the coaching, and I'll give you a quick response on that with my coaching hat off. Okay, so I will, that's another way to handle that. But my most favorite approach to this, I like to be more direct. And I'll even say to them, you know yourself better than anyone. What do you think the best decision is for you? Or what do you need to do to figure this out for you? Okay? That is another way. And now I'm going to give you actually some other shares from Michael, all right, in Taming Your Advice Monster. Because like he says, the first thing that usually comes up is the situation isn't necessarily the real situation. It's what's going on underneath. And that is always where we want to go as coaches. We want to go underneath. It's not just about the situation, the topic. It's going underneath. So he says, one of his first questions is, what is the real challenge here for you? That's his first question. And he says, this question really recognizes that neither one of you really know what's going on around the situation. You both might just think you do. He says, what you're really saying is the most important thing that I can do to help you is to support you to find the real important issue. Then what he does is he does what we call stretching the client. And what else? What else? That starts to really uncover, besides what was presented initially, what is underneath. All right? So this question really helps you go deeper as a coach and further ask questions to understand what is this really about? Then what he does again, this might sound like the same question. Now he says, what is the real challenge here for you? You know, there's something that happens with our clients, and I've certainly done this over the years, that when we put real in the question, what's the real thing, the real challenge, what's really going on here, it goes deeper with the client. Okay? He says that's when you get to the real thing. And then one of his other questions is, okay, so as coaching, we're not really working with problems. Everybody would agree with that. That's not our focus. Our clients come with them. That's not really our focus, is the problems. We want to work with our clients to move beyond the problem, the challenge, the situation, into the action and what they need to do to change it. So one of his final questions here is, what do you want? Here's the challenge, what do you want? And I certainly use that a lot if my clients, when they're having situations or challenges, they share it. I'm going to be empathetic and understand that. But at the same time, you stay focused on the problem. What do you get more of? Anybody? Anybody? What do we get more of? We get more of the problem. Yeah. I'll tell you, if you stay there with your client, you can be coaching on that problem for weeks, if not months. Okay? We want to move them beyond. So what do you want instead? Instead of this situation, what do you want? Because what that does, that shifts gears immediately in the client's head, and they start thinking about not the problem, what they want instead, that our role is to work with them to actually attain what they want. So remember, we start with our clients, here's where they are with the problem, here's the vision where they want, what they want, and we work with them in the gap to fill in that gap there. We coach them to get there. Okay? Another thing that we can do instead of handing out advice is stay curious. Be more curious. Ask questions. Because when we do that, we have a fully engaged client. On top of that, we are not only fully engaging the client, they are also engaging and making decisions for themselves. They are coming up with the answers, and that is so powerful. That is what we want to do. We want to empower our clients. This isn't about us. We want to empower them to get to the decisions. You know, even if we have answers to things, for example, you know, we're still going to coach them. Could we give them the answer? Yes. But we want to empower our clients to find their own answer. Right? We ask them, where would you find that? Who knows about that? What kind of resources do you think you have around that? Those are the kind of coaching questions we want to ask. We want them to figure it out. Okay? I just want to be clear, though, on advising, actual giving advice versus, I'm going to say, knowledge sharing, which is different, I'm going to say, and also educating. You know, those of us that are coaches, anything that has to do with development typically, whether it's leadership development, career development, personal development, there's a small education piece that we do when we are coaching around development. There are concepts. And many times we have a very small educational piece that we might share with them, but then we hand it back to them and say, okay, so now that I've shared that with you, what will you do with that? Or how can you see that fitting into what works for you? All right, so this is very common when we're doing development work, leadership development, teaching skills to leaders, teaching career techniques, even wellness. You're a wellness coach, there are concepts, you know, and there's a small educational piece, but what we want to do is share that quickly, put it back, give it back to the client. What do you think about that? What do you want to do with that? I want to know. Maybe they don't want to do anything with that, you know? I don't know. If they don't, okay, well, what do you want instead? So these questions about what you want become very, very important. And I like to say, like Michael says, stay curious longer. Ask those curiosity questions. That keeps you in the coaching frame, keeps you in partnership with your client, and also empowers them to figure it out. Anybody questions or comments or thoughts here? Guys are a quiet group. Linda, do you have any thoughts?
Unfortunately, I always have thoughts.
Please.
No, I think that it's that a lot of times when people are having trouble making decisions or in a rough spot, they're looking for someone to tell them what to do. And I think as a coach, when we can show them that they are the experts in their life and that they can come up with their own decisions, it's so reassuring to them. Even when they are in that amygdala part of their brain, when they're in that fight or flight, and they can start to do breathing and then get to that point to ask themselves, okay, what's one thing I can do right now that's going to make the biggest difference?
Right. Really,
it really helps.
Yeah, really empowering them. Because it's not our job to be around with our clients forever, right? It's our job to work with our clients, to build their confidence, to whatever it is they need to accomplish, and realize that they can do this and they can move on without us and keep doing this. Empowering them, building the confidence, whatever it is they need. Yeah, thank you, Lisa. Thanks. I'd like to take a minute to just go around the room, and if y'all wouldn't mind, just one little takeaway from today, one little share, if everybody wouldn't mind doing that. Would that be okay?
I'm struggling with the difference between education and advice. So education to me is steering people towards resources of information that would be useful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Advice nearly always has an opinion or a valuing.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct in those distinctions?
I think so. What was the second thing you said? I got the first one was steering people to resources. What was the second piece?
That when it's advice, there is in some valuing or qualifying related to the information. There's an opinion overlay.
Well, let me ask you this question. In coaching, do we share opinions? Anybody? No, we don't, do we?
Yeah.
So let me talk about education. As coaches, we are resources for our clients. Most of us have a huge database. I do, 25 years now, have a coaching database. My client wants information, looking for something. If I have it, they ask for it, I'll give it. But most importantly, too, there's a lot of information. I want to empower them to also find what they need. And I'll tell you, some of my clients come back with some of the best information that they actually share with me, and I'm like, wow, that's really good. But they did it themselves, and that's what's so empowering. Yes, I can hand them information. I certainly, if they're looking to work on something like resources for books, articles, I have thousands. And I'm happy to share those. And I tell them, all you have to do is ask if there's a resource that you want from me. And I'll tell you if I have it. Okay? But ideally, we want them to do the research, to find it, to know they can do this. So is that help at all, Rosemary?
No, absolutely. I just thought it was important to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. It is. We are not talking about where there's a difference between knowledge sharing, there's a difference between education and advising. We are only talking really about advising today. Okay? Thanks. Okay, so some shares. What are you taking away from today? Let's have a few shares.
I would say that how important it is to create that gap of where they are and where they want to be, so you can help focus on who they are in the process and, kind of through your curiosity, get them where they want to be able to walk around the situation and acknowledge that they have the answers. They just, helping them through that process of discovery.
Right. We support them, right, through that process. Here's where you are today. Here's where you want to go. We work with them to set the goals, fill the gap. That's what we do. And when they get excited about the vision or what they want, yeah, that's motivating, and that's what we want, not being stuck in the situation they're in or the problem, right? Thank you, Shelley. Really good stuff. Who else has a share here? One thing. Okay, I guess nobody wants to share today. Okay. All right, well, I want to thank you all for being here. Rosemary, I want to offer up to you, if you still have any questions or concerns about anything, because I sense there were some, I want you to feel free to reach out to me. You can just put Tina Elliott in Coach in Google, Elliott with one T. Go ahead and email me, and if we need to chat or you want to chat some more about this, I'm happy to do that. Okay?
My concern is that people use terms loosely, and therefore there's not clear communication.
Okay.
And, as I say, what's the difference between advice and education, and what's the difference between opinion and advice? What's the difference between coaching and mentoring? It is very difficult. The general population does not understand the difference.
Right. I agree with you. And that's our role, to educate them on what coaching is versus mentoring, which is why that's all part of our ethics. Between mentoring, consulting, educating, we have to educate our clients.
And that's what I'm saying. So it's really important to understand expectations. I ask expectations before I lay on them. This is my limit. This is what I do, and this is what I won't do.
Right. Absolutely. That's what we all should be doing. That's right. That's our number one, code of ethics. That's what we need to do, setting the expectations right up front, what we deliver, what we don't. Thank you. Absolutely. All right, everyone. Anybody, before we leave here today, I want to thank you all for being here. I really appreciated being with you. If you have any follow-up questions after this, feel free to reach out to me. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Tina.
All right, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.